Blog Talk Radio.
All the true worshipers, you don't need no help. Just open your mouth and release that sound that's inside of you. Come on.
Got true love instead of pain. That freedom, though you captured me, I've got joy instead of mourning.
There's beauty in my brokenness.
I've got true love instead of pain. That freedom, though you captured
me.
Good evening.
Good evening, everyone. Sorry about that technical difficulty. Hi, Erica. How are you?
I'm great, Stacy. How are you?
I am doing well. Well, thank you for joining me tonight. And welcome to all of our radio listeners. You are listening to the Eloquently Speaking Radio Network. And tonight's topic is Eloquently Speaking, Are You Messed Up by the Hookup? And tonight we're going to be talking about codependent relationships. And Erica, I got a wide variety of responses about this topic because codependent relationships mean so much to so many people, and people have different understandings. And I also have a different understanding because I like to think outside of the box. And tonight we're going to have a very good discussion on this topic, but I just want to give a little bit of background about why we are doing what we're doing. And this is a follow-up. We're continuing on our journey on mental health wellness. And so our topics have been dealing with self-care, self-love, brokenness, woundedness, post-traumatic stress disorder, depression. And although all of these topics are different, they still have been dealing with relationships in one form or another. So when it comes down to codependent relationships, it's not limited to a boyfriend-girlfriend or a marital relationship. It could be a parental, it could be siblings, it could be coworkers. It crosses over into like all relationships. However, the most popular one tends to be in relationships where one person is more dependent on the other person. And then we have people that are caught up in addictions, and then their spouse, their girlfriend, their boyfriend, or a friend or a family member constantly comes to their rescue. Like no matter what is going on in their lives, these people that love them and want to see them overcome their addiction. And sometimes it's not, when I say addictions, we tend to think about the most common, which is drugs, which is alcohol, gambling, sex, food, overeating. But there are so many addictive behaviors that go unnoticed. And those are the one that tends to be the most toxic, because some people are addicted to hurt and pain. Some people are addicted to anger, bitterness, and resentment, and they act it out in their behavior. And so their behavior flows over into the lives of those that they are in relationship with. And sometimes it's tragic. Sometimes, you know, it borderlines domestic violence and abuse. And I mean, it's just, this topic is very wide, and it can cover so many things. But tonight we're going to just be open and honest like we always are. And we encourage those of you that are listening, if you do have a question or comment, you want to be a part of the discussion, please press 1 and we will open up your mic. One of the foundational scriptures that I wanted to share for tonight's show was in Genesis, the 12th chapter and the 13th chapter, because I've been sharing things on the message board throughout the week. And I just wanted to highlight for a moment the relationship with Abraham and his nephew Lot. And in Genesis, the 12th chapter, God told Abraham to leave his country, to leave his family, and go where he was telling him to go. But God never told him to take Lot with him. So Lot ended up being a burden to Abraham. Lot ended up having a toxic relationship with his uncle because he was always getting into trouble. And Abraham was always pulling him out of trouble. So I wanted to start with just sharing that for a moment, because not all codependent relationships are, like I said, a personal relationship, an intimate relationship. And Erica, one of the reasons I brought up Abraham and Lot is because in families today, one of the things that we always talk about is the family, restoration of the family. And in many families today, codependent relationships are destroying families. Like grandmothers are worn out because their children are not taking care of their children, and the grandchildren, you know, are the grandmother's responsibility. And, you know, it's just so many ways that we could go into this. But I'm going to turn the mic over to you. What's your take on this topic, and what do you look forward to getting out of this discussion or bringing to the table tonight?
You touched on some really good things when you said normally when we about the addictions and if, you know, people want to save their loved ones from addictions and we normally think it's drugs and things like that. But also, like you said, it's bad situations. Some family members just make or some loved ones just continue to make bad situations, bad mistakes, bad judgments each and every time they get themselves into bad situations all the time. And the loved one tends to, it could be a mother, it could be a father, it could be an aunt, it could be a grandmother, just want to jump in and be, you know, and save them all the time, which is very bad on both sides because when you consistently dig someone out of trouble, they never get the lesson. They never grow from that. All they know is that all they know is, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. All they know is that I can do this and I can pretty much live my life and do what I want because I know for a fact that this loved one will be here and they will always get me out, which is sad. Also, it is quite frequent, and I've seen this and experienced it. I might step on somebody's toes with this one, but normally it tends to be moms and their sons. And I have to put it out there. The son just do stuff, and mama got to jump in and say all the time.
Okay, Erica, you're fading in and out again.
I'm fading in and out. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. What was the last thing you heard?
About mothers and sons. Like, I'm hearing you, but, like, you're talking, and then it's, like, a little echo, but then it's fading out, and then you'll come back in.
Oh, okay. Is it still doing it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me take, because right now it's on speaker. Let me take it off speaker.
Okay.
All right, how does that sound?
Oh, that's much better.
It probably was bad. Sometimes Wi-Fi just act like it want to act.
Okay.
About, and I said most of the time it's common from my experience, it's like mother and son. Moms tend to save their boys from all the decisions, you know, all the little decisions that they make, all the bad situations they get themselves in, and mom just jump in there with the cape on her back, the super mom, and she just gonna pull them out of everything. And that's just very common. And I know I probably, because I am one, I don't have any children, so I don't know what it feels. Imagine, you know, someone that you birthed and you raised for, you know, from a baby all the way up into a man. And you just don't want to see them struggling. You don't want to see them in pain. You don't want to see them fall by the wayside. At the same time, it's not a good thing. It's still codependency only because number one, they're not growing. And number two, sometimes I don't think parents realize that is that they're sucking the life out of you. You know,
yes. At
the same time. So it's very draining. And I think parents believe that this is what I am supposed to do. And sometimes it's a very fine line as to what you're supposed to do. And, you know, when you got to let them go and say, okay, you know, I can't, you know what I mean? So those are two good points. And I'm hoping like this conversation really helps someone kind of look at their line and look at where they are. Because we're not responsible to a certain degree. We're responsible for helping one another, you know, bear burdens and things like that. But we're not responsible for doing it for anybody.
Right.
They want to do it want to be better. They got to want to, you know, take that right road for themselves. They got to want to grow and learn. And we can't do that for them. So we got to learn how as people to draw the line between what is best for them, for their interests, and not try to save them. So we got to kind of, you know, look at that because, you know, we already have a savior. We're not here to save anybody. We're only here to help.
Well, that is true. And I wanted to wait till you was finished so I didn't cut you off. But you were still going in and out. Like, I hear you, but then it's, you know, your fate in a way. So I don't know if it's your...
Let me go down. I'm going to go down and get my house phone.
Okay.
And that might be better. I'll stay on the line until I go get it.
Okay. And I'm going to just keep on talking. For those of you that are listening, we apologize for the technical difficulties, and we're going to continue to flow with our show. And just bear with us while Erica goes to get another phone. So we're talking about codependent relationships, and we want to hear from you. What do you think a codependent relationship is? And Erica just finished talking about codependent relationships with a mother and a son. And we also have codependent relationships for fathers and daughters. And then it doesn't have to be limited to daughters. It can be codependent relationships for a parent and their children, period. And a lot of times it deals with control and trying to be everything they want, you know, they could possibly be to their child. There is an article in Parenthood magazine, and it says 8 signs that you might be a codependent parent and how to heal. And it says a codependent parent is one who has an unhealthy attachment to their child and tries to exert excessive control over the child's life because of that attachment. Codependency can be found in the full range of parental relationships. A codependent father may rely on his daughter or son to keep him mentally stable and emotionally happy. A codependent mother may rely on her son or daughter to take responsibility for her physical well-being. While codependent parents may claim that the close relationship they covet is a sign of well-functioning family, their preoccupation with each other is a sign of dysfunction. And so on that note, I'm going to bring Erica back on the line. And was you able to hear what I just read from Parenthood magazine?
Yes, I was able to hear. Can you hear me clearly now?
Oh, my good. Yes, I hear you real clear now.
Wonderful, good. It must have been the Wi-Fi on that phone. Okay.
Okay. So I want to read that last part again. It says, while codependent parents may claim that the close relationship they covet is a sign of well-functioning family, their preoccupation with each other is a sign of dysfunction. And throughout, like, almost every conversation we've had, we've talked about dysfunction in one shape or form. Whether it was, and again, like everything we're dealing with, we're talking about dealing with humanity and we're dealing with relationships, whether it's an intimate relationship or, you know, a friendship, a parental relationship. I can't say that enough because I don't want people to be closed-minded and think that this is just all about intimate relationships, a boyfriend, a girlfriend, because codependency is way bigger than that. And Erica, it's affecting so many families, so many lives, even on the job, you know, codependent mm-hmm. relationships. And the word to highlight is dysfunction.
Yep.
And everybody is dysfunctional somewhere in their life, somewhere in their relationships. Nobody is perfect. Every family has some kind of dysfunction. And it's nothing to be afraid of or nothing to be ashamed or embarrassed about, but yet many people tend to shy away from it. They don't want to talk about it. They think that their family is the only one that is jacked up from the floor up. And I'm telling you, That's not the case. Everybody family has some kind of dysfunction. So dysfunction means something is not functioning properly. And when we look at the, like, when we think about all of the things we've been talking about, Erica, straight out the gate, you know, self-talk, all of those things play a role in how we function and how well we get along with one another. And at the end of the day, if we don't feel good about ourselves, if we don't think right about ourselves, we're not going to function properly. And the thing is, so many people have been operating, you know, with a hole in their heart, a hole in their soul. They've been wounded, they've been broken, and their dysfunction is now normal to them. And when they're functioning properly, it's like the abnormal, because they're so used to the dysfunction. They're so used to the hurt and pain. And as a life coach, have you experienced any of that? I know you can't get into things because your clients, that's confidentiality. But just from your experience, what's your take on that? Do you find that many people are dysfunctional within themselves and then outside because of the people that they are connected to?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing about it is that a lot of people are in denial about it. And the reason why I think it's so upsetting and folks don't want to talk about it is because that is your life. When you're so used to living a certain way, and then you have someone who comes along and says, well, you know, that's not, you know, how you should live your life, or, you know, you need to change some things because that could be hurtful for you. They don't have an understanding of that because they've been living in it for so long. So they look at it as like they normalize it. It's normalized function, and all of us have done it, are doing it, and we'll do it in the future. We all have dysfunction. Everybody has. And in our, especially in our family, we're always taught to be there for family. You're always supposed to be there for family. You know, when they call, you're supposed to always have their backs, always be there. But there's a line. There's a line that has to be drawn as to what you do and how you operate, even in regards to family.
Yeah.
Because you're not really helping your family member if they're going to consistently depend on you. So how are they going to grow and get better if they do that? And then how are you going to live your life and move forward in what you need to be doing for yourself if you're consistently saving somebody else? So that's why we have a lot of households that are in dysfunction, they're out of order, and they're not doing what they're doing for themselves is because they're so busy over here in somebody else's stuff trying to repair them. And a lot of times, now this is another one that I found out, a lot of times the reason why people focus so much on everybody else's stuff and saving them, it's because they don't want to deal with their own reality.
So they
choose to go over here and let me look at this person and 60 nonsense so I have something to talk about, because I don't want to look at my own nonsense. And I don't want to fix that because it's either too hurtful. People are fearful of what they will actually feel about themselves. They don't want to deal in their own reality. So it's no joke. It really is. You can look, it's a whole bunch of different sides to this.
It is. And I think you just laid the foundation for me to share a couple of verses in Genesis, the 13th chapter, because you just highlighted the family. I mean, we've been kind of talking about the family for a moment, especially when you mentioned the mother and son, and then I followed up with the son, father, and the daughter. Family dysfunction in the family and codependency in the family, sometimes we don't see certain things in the Bible. But the Bible, like, there's nothing new under the sun. So when we started this journey on codependency, Abraham and Lot, their relationship was standing out to me. And I just want to share a couple of verses, and then I want to point out a couple of things. And then you could tell me what stands out to you as I'm reading it. But for those of you that are following along, I'm going to read Genesis, the 13th chapter, verse 5 through 15. And it says, "And Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. And the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. And there was a strife between the herdmen of Abraham's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle. And the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelt then in the land. And Abram said unto Lot, Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the left, to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. And the Lord said unto Abram, After that Lot was separated from him, lift up now thy eyes and look from the place where thou art now. Thou art northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever." So, Erica, I don't know what's standing out to you in this scripture, but it is so clear that there was strife between Abraham, which at the time his name was Abram and Lot. Now, Lot only had the favor on his life because of his uncle Abram. So they both was doing well. They had great substance. But Abram acknowledged there is strife between your herdmen and my herdmen. He wanted peace. He didn't want to argue. And in Genesis 12, we also learn that Abram was always coming to Lot's rescue because he was always getting into trouble. So here we see if there's going to be conflict in the family, why not ask for peace? And sometimes that peace is only going to come in separation. If you know you're not going to get along, if you know that the space that you're in is going to create problems, then let's find a solution together, and then let's part ways peacefully, because we don't have to be enemies. We don't have to fight one another. Your people don't have to fight my people, and my people don't have to fight your people. So clearly, Abraham gave Lot an opportunity to go where he gave him first choice. Abram was the senior. He had everything. He could have chose where he wanted and told Lot where to go, but he humbled himself. But Erica, what stands out to me, and everybody that's listening, you got to remember, we are talking about codependent relationships, and we're going to break down the definition of a codependent relationship. But it wasn't until Abram separated from Lot that God told him, look, because all this land that you see, I'm going to give it to you and to your seed forever. So remaining in a codependent relationship, guess what? You are hindering your own blessings. You are stopping your own blessings. Because while you're in that codependent relationship, God is not going to allow you to see, touch, or enjoy all of the bountiful blessings he have in store for you. So somebody need to really catch that. Because, Erica, a lot of people are having a difficult time separating from their families. Some of them feel guilty. Some of them feel like the family members ain't going to make it without them. You know, I've been doing everything. I've been supporting them. I've been praying. I've been doing this. I've been doing that. I. But when are you going to get out of the way and let God do some things? You see what I'm saying? We have to learn how to separate ourselves even when it hurts. And I know I just shared a lot, so I'm going to turn the mic over to you.
You hit the nail on the head, because that's the one that stuck out to me the most, is when the Lord now started speaking to Abram again to say, okay, this is what I have for you. And like you said, you hinted, God wasn't giving him nothing until Lot moved on. Until they parted ways, God was not going to give him anything. And the reason being is because he knew that Lot would destroy everything if he allowed Abram, if he gave Abram those blessings and Lot was still around. He knew it would still be strife, it would be even worse, and all the blessings would be destroyed. So that's why he waited, and that's why he told Abram in the beginning to leave Lot, leave them where they at. That's why he told them that, because he knew Lot's heart and he knew Abram would have issues. My thing is that people got to, a lot of times God will send us folks who will tell us things, and we don't always believe them. When people say, okay, now be careful, keep your eyes open, or whatever have you, and they give you these little things of wisdom, and we don't like to listen. We don't want to listen because we're always taught, and it goes back to you're always supposed to be there for family. You're always supposed to be there. You're always supposed to get along. You're supposed to hang out. You know, you're supposed to be able to call each other on the phone and talk. You know, family's supposed to be able to borrow things. And you know, and you're supposed to let them have whatever it is they need to have and give them money when they need it. We're taught all of this stuff. But the thing about it is, and it's nothing wrong with helping family out. Yes, you should. Yes, you should help. Even the Bible speaks of you should. You should take care of family. Yes, you should. But there is balance. There is balance to life. There's balance to everything, which means you have to balance this out. Because if you give everything you got to your family, your loved ones, or whatever have you, what is it that you're going to have to live off of? And who is going to help you when you decide that you wanted to go in and save somebody else and give them everything you got? Who's going to help you now? And now you're sitting there wondering what's going on and why not. It's because God didn't, maybe he didn't ask you to do that. So we have to be very mindful of what we do, you know, with our loved ones. There's nothing wrong with helping, but you got to balance that thing out, and you got to ask for some guidance. And even if, because like I said, we always say everybody is not there, everyone does not have a relationship with God. You have to somehow come to an understanding, and based on experience, really. How has this served you well so far? Sometimes you just have to think about what happened. Now, every time I jump and save this person, what happens? They go back to doing the same thing. And you got to ask yourself the question, how often am I going to do this? How often do I have the resources to continue to jump out here and save this loved one because they continue to go down this road? Am I ever going to get any of my stuff done if I continue to do this? We're supposed to love ourselves, love our neighbors like we love ourselves, right? So you got to love yourself. So is that really loving yourself before you love your neighbor? Are you shortchanging you in order to go out here and save someone else? You can't do that. Because what happens is codependent relationships will make you angry. You're trying to fill, and some people are trying to fill a void that they're feeling, but another person can't fill a void for you. So what happens if they suddenly, you know, pass away? They suddenly decide they want to go, or for whatever have you. Then let's say they pass away, and let's stick with that. What are you going to do? What's going to happen? because they filled that void, but that was temporary. So now they're gone. So what are you going to do with that void that's still there? Which the void was always there because they can never fill it. Another person can never fill a void within you. So what do you want to do? You have to be careful. That's very dangerous because in some cases people have taken their lives because this person is no longer around and they feel as though they can't live. Do you want that to be you? That it's not a healthy mindset. So you definitely have to be careful how much energy that you put into someone else because it's very easy to become attached to the point where you cannot see yourself living life without someone else. And that's very dangerous. That's very dangerous. So you got to be careful with that.
You know, normally it'd be like, wow, you said a mouthful, Stacey, but woo, Erica, that was a mouthful. I love it. And it's, you know, it's so real because when we don't deal with our own issues, mm-hmm. we are going to look at everybody else. And then even whatever that void is, whatever that hurt or that pain is in our lives, we're going to pour all of that energy into other people.
Mm-hmm.
And we get overachievers, you get people that's perfectionists, they, you know, they have to do it right all of the time, just go above and beyond helping people and just being available. And a lot of times helping without people asking for help, you know, just asking or doing, you know, overdoing things. And it's like, what's really going on with you? Like, why are you so into other people? And
mm-hmm.
I know loneliness has a lot to do with it as well. Loneliness and rejection, because a lot of people are wounded. A lot of people are hurt. A lot of people are busy, like you say, trying to help everybody else, but they're not trying to help themselves. And this is very, very good. And I was listening, you know, I was listening to different things that I could actually play that's related to our topic. And I think learning how to control ourselves, learning how to love ourselves, learning how to, like you say, self-talk.
Mm-hmm.
We got to learn how to talk to ourselves. Like the reason I chose the song is Beauty in My Brokenness. Because
mm-hmm.
we've all been broken. We've all experienced some kind of hurt and pain. And so in that brokenness, when we're going through it, it doesn't feel good. And we don't know what in the world is going on. Like all of the arrows is pointing in every which direction. Like which way do I go? Like,
right,
you
right.
don't know. You're standing at this crossroad like the Scarecrow from The Wizard of Oz, like, okay, am I going to go down this yellow brick road? Like, where am I going? And so at some point, you have to make a decision. And, Erica, some people may not make the right decision, but you know what? Get out of the boat and make a decision. Go in the direction you feel led to go. And if it wasn't the right direction, guess what? You just make another decision. You make another
mm-hmm.
choice.
Yep.
But ultimately, we have to learn how to take control of our own lives, of our own destinies, before we could try and help other people. But unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
it happens. So I'm going to play this piece that talks about seven things you can control. And the reason I'm going to share this clip is because we all have a choice, which brings me back to the brokenness and everything that we're talking about. No matter what you have gone through, choices that you made that brought hurt and pain to you or hurt and pain to someone else, and then things that happened to you that you absolutely had no control over. We can't change that, but you can change how you respond to what happened to you. And you can choose to take control over that entire area of your heart, of your mind, of your soul, your emotions, your will that damaged you to get back on the right track where you don't have to go down in the downward spiral. You in agreement with me with that?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So we're going to listen to this clip, and then we're going to come back and talk about it. And for those
okay.
of you that are listening, this particular clip is teaching us how to deal with ourselves. And this is going to help us to go deeper with this conversation because people that are in codependent relationships, there are several reasons that they end up in codependent relationships. And while we look at other people and while we tend to say every classify everything with a narcissist and stuff, we really need to look at ourselves and see where we are and what doors we opened up that could possibly lead to a person being codependent upon us because we left that door open because we felt sorry for them, because we felt like we could help them. But every assignment you, like, well, just because you see a need, it doesn't mean it's your job to help them. Like, I used to act out of my compassion all of the time, and God didn't tell me to help those people, and I ended up being in their storm, just like Jonah. Jonah got in the boat, and then the mariners, they ended up in the storm. They threw Jonah out of the boat. Guess what? They came out of Jonah's storm. So just because we see a need, it doesn't mean it's our job to fix it.
That's right.
So here's the seven things you can control. And
there are many things that can make a huge difference in your life. Some of these things can change everything for you on their own. If you are committed to work on them all, you will become one powerful human being. If you are committed to change, to improve, you will change. You will improve. Here's seven things that you can control that will make a massive difference in your life if you decide and commit to them. Number one, your thoughts and beliefs. Number two, being kind to others. Number three, your effort. Number four, your pursuit of knowledge. Number five, your gratitude for what you do have. Number six, how you treat others. Number seven, who you surround yourself with. Now let me explain how these things can make a difference in your life. Number one, your thoughts and beliefs. How you see the world is how you live in the world. If you believe people are mostly good, you will see mostly good people. If you think about all the negative things around and the bad people in the world, that is what you will attract. The meaning you give to everything in your life becomes your life. If you believe in miracles, you might attract one. If you don't, you have no hope. If you believe your best is yet to come, your best is on its way. It does not take a lot of common sense to understand that positive people live better and happier lives than negative people. People who believe in abundance and expect abundance enjoy more of it than those who speak of lack. So sharpen your mind, practice positive affirmations, work on yourself every day. You are in control of your mind and beliefs, and shifting this can change everything. Choose to see the magic in the mess. Choose to see the power you developed from your pain. Choose to see the strength you gained from your struggles. They did make you stronger. Number two, being kind to others. Kindness and compassion shouldn't require effort. It's just part of your real nature. And when you give, the universe always returns with interest. When you are kind to others, more people are kind to you. If you choose to see negativity, negativity will show up in your life. Kindness, compassion, and giving to others not only lifts them, it lifts you too. There aren't many better feelings than knowing that you made a difference in the life of another human. You don't know who is hurting. One simple, kind interaction could change someone's life. It could save someone's life. You never know what your words mean to another or when they might need it. So be kind and always remind those close to you that they matter. Choose kindness over your need to be right. Kind people are always the most loved. You want more love? Give more love. You want better friends? Be a better friend. You want more kindness? Be a kind person. Regardless of what others do or don't do, be kind and watch those around you change with you. Number three, your effort. You can't mistake this one. Your effort equals your results. The law of attraction is only going to work if you do. This does not mean it needs to be a struggle. Effort can be effortless. It can and should be doing something you love. It needs not be a struggle, but you must put in the work if you want the results. You are always in control of the amount of effort you put in, the amount and quality of the work you put in to your business and yourself. So you are always in control of your results. Number four, the pursuit of knowledge. You are always in control of your own self-development and growth. This world is changing so fast, and if you are not willing to grow, you will fall behind. As humans, we must be growing to live our fullest life. Choose topics that light you up. Expand your mind and soul with books, audio, seminars, anything that makes you feel better, and become better. Commit to self-growth. Anything that makes you feel better. Commit to be a curious seeker of what makes you light up, what makes you stronger, wiser, more powerful. And when you grow, help someone else up to your level. Number five, being grateful for what you do have. We speak about gratitude a lot. The best teachers on earth speak about gratitude a lot. Why? There's no better way to improve your day or your life than perspective and gratitude for what you do have. What can you appreciate today? What is great in your life right now? Number six, your presence. Most people live almost exclusively in their heads, stuck in an endless cycle of worry and anxiety about the future, stuck in an endless cycle of regret about the past, meaningless mind transactions of no value. Be one of the few who live in this moment. Be one of the few who notice their family and friends, who notice the miracle of existence on this earth. Live more in the present. Enjoy the little things. Leave your devices behind more often. Get out of your head and into the magic of life right now. Number seven, who you surround yourself with. You always choose who you surround yourself with and how much time you give all the people in your life. You choose if people drain your energy or give you energy based on the quality and compatibility of people you surround yourself with. Surround yourself with people that make you feel good about you. People that get you, that allow you to be you.
And I let the music play a little longer because I wanted people to just really think about what they just heard. Because that, to me, was a powerful message. And the part where he said, you know, stop letting people suck the life out of you. And I think that's one of the main reasons that I love this message, because many times when you're in a codependent relationship, and it doesn't have to be limited to that, but sometimes people suck the life out of us. They do. But at the end of the day, we still have control. And this whole message was all about standing accountable for your actions. You can drive the bus. Nobody can drive the bus but you. But we tend to submit to other people because we want to please people. And we want to please people because there's underlying issues in our own lives where we need to get stronger. And it's hard when you don't know the beginning process of the healing process, and then you got to forgive. You know, forgiveness, and we have to forgive ourselves. But the bottom line is, how are you going to control you? Because if you can't control yourself, how do you expect somebody else to respect your boundaries? Because if you're not controlling yourself, you're not going to have boundaries. And then people are going to walk all over you and take advantage of you. So the mic is yours.
Yes, ma'am. You said a mouthful there. There, I got to touch on the part where you said a lot of underlying problems. In my opinion, what I've noticed, the biggest problem is fear. People fear being alone. They don't want to be alone. People will fear that they're going to be judged, because if I don't do this for my loved one, then and everybody going to look at me like I'm bad, and they're going to shame me, you know, because I ain't there for the family, and, you know, and I just, and you just need to help them, and what's wrong with you? And people are in fear of that. They fear that they will have no one if they do this, if they do something outside of what the normal, you know, thing is for their circle, their family to do. They feel as though everybody is going to walk away from them and they will be alone. And to feel like that, because I felt like that, is scary. It really is scary. My thing is, if you don't, like I say, test the waters, to see what will happen. Let's see what happens if I decide, if I don't feel like it, if I say no. Let's see what happens. And the thing about this is, the only way that you're going to find out what's on the other side of things is if you try it. Stick your toe in the water and see whether or not it's cold. That's the only way you're going to know, if you got to stick your toe in the water and see. And you will find out that when you decide to say no and go against the grain, you will not stop breathing. And I can guarantee you that. You will continue to live. You will still breathe. You're not going to lay down and die because you decided to say no. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. You are still here. Stacy is still here. I'm still here. After we done learn how to say no, okay, and continue to do so when we need to.
Yeah, so that's true.
It's not going to happen. Yeah, it's not going to happen. So you just got to, and I agree, that seven things you can control is very powerful. And I don't think people understand, you control your circumstances. So you can't
absolutely
complain about how something is going and you still living in it. So you complaining, but you still living in it, and it's bothering you, and it's making you sick. It's giving you a headache, but you are choosing to stay. And that's the problem that you have to look at. You have to figure out, if this is making me sick, if this is giving me a headache, if this is tearing my life apart, why am I still here? Why am I still staying? If this person is doing that to me, or if this situation is doing that to me, why am I still in it? That's the question, because it's not the other person that you're codependent with, is not them, it's you. You making that decision to stay. They can't make you stay. They can't make you do for them. They can't make you jump in and try to save their lives. You decided to do that, and you got to ask yourself that serious question. You got to sit down and have a conversation with yourself and ask, why am I still in this? What is it that I'm trying to find? What is it that I'm trying to fill? What is it? And you have to ask yourself that serious question, and you have to be honest about what is going on with you so you can get your answer. Because until you do that, until you face that, until you face yourself, it's not going away.
But you know what? I believe, I mean, I'm in agreement with what you said, but I have a but. And my butt
she
is.
She got a B-U-T, not B-U-T.
I have a problem with people when, you know, we all have a choice to get out. But what happens when you're purposely being manipulated and taken advantage of and they keep you in this vicious cycle and you can't get out? I mean, ultimately, yes, we could all make a decision. And I'm going to use an example. I'm a survivor of domestic violence, but I'm also an advocate, certified. I'm licensed in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, and in Delaware County. So I went to two different trainings, two different places, and they did things totally differently. I mean, pretty much similar as far as, you know, the certification part and the hours, the clinical things. But Erica, both classes, like I'm listening and I'm participating, but God was downloading stuff to me because they looking at everything from a book knowledge. But God was dealing with me with scriptures and from a holistic perspective, because all of these women and men, I don't care how abused they are in their relationships. If you don't deal with the root issue, they're going to get out of one relationship and go right back to the other relationship. Now, I'm not saying that what they do don't help, because it does, but we need to do more than empower them to drive the bus. We have to help them understand their root issue. And this is what I love about what you said last week when Apostle Sheila was on the line. You said, we are not here to help you. I mean, we are not here to make decisions for you. I was like, you better go here, because we can't make decisions for people. We can't, because we would be liable for that. We empower people to make decisions. So the reason I brought up the training with the domestic violence is because we, during the training process, we had to role play, and they gave us play money, they gave us vouchers, and they gave us some vouchers for, like, the hotels and then the shelters. And so they had different stations set up around the room. So each person, we were in abusive, like they had a section where your abuser was at. So you had to make the choice to leave your home or not. So if you left your home, first place you're going to go for help is the county assistance office, you know, file for your restraining order. So, and then they tell you all of the things that are available to you, but ultimately you have to make your decision to continue to move forward to the next stage or to make the decision to go back to your abuser. So some people chose to go to family members, and once they got to the family member's house, they got rejected. The family was like, no, you got too many problems with this man. He going to end up killing you. Like, I don't want him anywhere near my family, near my children. No, you can't come here. They felt for her, but they was like, no, you can't stay here. So now the car fare you spent getting there, that took away from your money. So now you have to make your decision of where you're going to go now. So, okay, the next person, see, people are prideful. They don't want to go to county assistance and get the help. So she took her money and she said she going her voucher, she going to stay at the hotel. Well, once he found out she was at the hotel, what you going to do now? Are you going to let him in? Are you going to enjoy the apology, the fake apology? Because they love to say, oh, baby, I'm so sorry. I'm never going to hurt you again. Please forgive me. And so she still had to make a choice, and which is why listening to the seven, you know, things to control, we have to make a choice. Sometimes that choice is going to put you in a situation that may not be popular, but in the context of what we're talking about, domestic violence, it's life or death. Are you going to choose to go back to something that's hurting you, or are you going to choose to move forward? Because earlier you said, you know, people have to make that choice, but some don't. So going back to the game, after she left the hotel, right, so now she want to go to the county assistance office, but She didn't qualify for anything. So she used up all her vouchers, she used up all her money, and now she had nowhere to go. So the only option was to be homeless out on the street or go in a shelter or go back to the abuser. And this one person, you know what she did? She went back to the abuser. And I don't fault her at all. And I'm so glad that we did that particular role play, and I'm sharing it with our listeners because some people do try and get out, and every door closed in their face. Yep. Family members act like they don't know what they're going through. Family members don't want to open up their home to them. Family members don't want to get involved. Even people that live next door, they hear the fighting. They hear the bruises. Mm-hmm. I mean, they hear the hits and stuff. They see the bruises, but nobody wants to speak up.
Mm-hmm.
So in so many ways, they are like a part of the codependency, because you you know someone is being abused and you're not doing anything about it. So people do try. And what I would like to say to anybody that is in an abusive relationship, because domestic violence is a codependent relationship.
It
and
is.
Most abusers, you know, we got the abusee, and most men and women that abuse their spouses or their partners, Erica, they got some serious issues. And they use their power and authority to manipulate their partners into staying. And that's why I got so passionate about why I'm sharing all of this, because manipulation plays a major role in why some people stay in toxic relationships, abusive relationships, codependent relationships that literally suck the life out of them. And during that honeymoon period, oh, everything is all glam, glam, bam, bam. You know, we going out to dinner. He brought me some flowers. But that doesn't last. Something irritates him. Then we got that building, the tension process. And then he's angry. He's going to hit you. He's going to slap you. And you right back where you was at. So we have to, at some point, you have to make a decision. And everybody that have been in abusive relationships, codependent relationships, toxic relationships, and they didn't make a choice, guess what? Some of them died.
Yeah.
And some of them are still, some of them are still in it many, many years later. But for those that made a choice, that said, I love me enough to get away from this, they rolled. They was like, I'm outie. I'm out of this stuff. And they got away. And I thank God, you know, I had to make a choice. I stayed for the children. That's the wrong reason to stay. Get out.
See? And a lot of times, and I've heard other people say that, and a lot of times, I mean, you don't know it's the wrong choice until you know, some time goes by and you look back. You know what I mean? So you don't know, because you're living this thing out, and this is something unusual, you know, that came out of nowhere. You didn't see it. You know what I mean? So it's something, you don't have no rule book to tell you what to do. So you just, you're going off of, you're in fear, you're in danger for your life. So it's hard for individuals to even think through that process, because it's like you don't have time. You're trying, you're going into survival mode. You're trying to figure out, how am I going to stay alive, you know, through this thing? How am I going to live? You're just trying to get to the next day. You know what I mean? So it can't be easy. I've heard stories. I have never been in that situation, but I've heard stories. And I can only imagine having to go through something like that. All you want to know is, I don't want to die. So how is that not going to happen? You know what I mean? But when you talked about that, well, you know what came to my mind is The Burning Bed. The movie.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
It was a Francine Hughes story. It was based on a true story. And the events that you said she went through, she went to the cops for help. Well, we can't do anything because we don't have no evidence. Then she goes to his mom, and his mom sent her right back, or she tells on it, well, she overheard. And all sorts of stuff. The girl had no help whatsoever. So all she did was go into self-preservation mode. You know what? One of us going to die, and it's not going to be me. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you would hate, I'm not saying what she did, because taking a life is very serious. She got to the point where she was, her back was against the wall, and she felt as though she had no other choice but to do so. You know, and sometimes that's not well. And like the manipulation is, he manipulated her, and now, oh, I'm sorry, I ain't going to do it no more. And then what did he do? Next day he did it again and again, and it just went like that for years. So manipulation is a huge, huge, huge part of it, and you're absolutely right, because some people are manipulated back into those codependent relationships, and they feel as though they just can't get out. They're made to feel that the person going to kill themselves or they're going to die if they don't stay, and they feel bad, so they play on their heart. They pull those heartstrings, and it keeps them there. And it's a shame. It really is a shame, because it's like having a hole in your heart if you decide to go. And that's why some people go back, because they feel as though it's such a big hole in their heart, and they feel so bad for leaving them. They go back out of filling a void, number one. Well, that doesn't, doesn't necessarily have to be a number one, but filling a void, or they just feel so bad because this person don't have nobody else to help them, and I'm the only one, and all of this stuff. A lot of times, those situations, in my opinion, happen is because they need to learn, they need to change. Folks don't change until they are tested, meaning until you leave them alone, until you let them go, leave them where they at. That's the growth starts, because if you condone any kind of behavior, folks will never change. And we're not here to stay the same. We're here to grow and get better. People don't do that unless you call them on their stuff and walk away. That's the only way they do it. That's the only way they grow. And if you about your life when you grew up in your household, and your mama told you not to do something, right? And you're going to take it, you know how parents tell you not to do, and you're just going to go ahead and do it anyway, right? Let's say she told you not to touch the stove because it's going to burn you. Well, you know how kids are. You tell them not to do something, they go and do it anyway. So when you get burnt, you want to cry and cry and cry and cry, and your mama looking at you, and what does she say? Didn't I tell you not to do that? I told you not to do that. That's like that. That's like God saying, I tried to warn you about your behavior, and since you didn't want to listen, this is the situation I'm placing you in so you can learn. You can really learn, but when God do it, it ain't no joke. So, I mean, that's why we're on here on this show, because we don't want anybody to go through that. You have got to learn what the issue is within you that makes you stay, because if you do not, you don't want to end up in a situation that you cannot get out of. You don't want to place yourself there. You don't want God to step in, because what's going to happen is if he does step in there to separate you, it is not going to be pretty. It is not going to be pretty. It's going to be for your own good, and you're going to be on the other side. You're going to be a lot better, and you're going to look back on it and say, okay, I understand. It's a grace period. You know, sometimes God gives you a grace period, and he sends you warnings to say, you need to let this go. You need to let this go. You need to let this go. And we don't want to listen, and we want to override that, whatever our reasons are. If he has to step in and do it, it's going to feel 10 times worse than you taking the initiative to ask yourself the serious questions as to why you are staying. You know, so that's why we're on here, and we're trying to get you. We are trying to get you and say, take a look at what's going on. Ask yourself those tough questions. Should I be here? Should not be here? You know, take a piece of paper and write that down. What are the pros and the cons of staying in this relationship? If you got more cons than you got pros, then there's your answer right there. Sometimes if you journal, just take that piece of paper and do it and just write it down. Sometimes you can see things so clearly when you write them in black and white. You know, so it's just, and everything, Stacey, you always talk about goes back to self. Everything is self. Everything starts with the person. It starts with you. Every decision that we make, every mistake always comes back to self. Always comes back to self. We want to blame everybody else. We can't. You can't blame everybody else. You have to figure out what is going on with you internally.
Yes.
Then you can solve your problems.
You know, that's a big one. And, you know, I always say my private pain for public profit. And on one of my posts on my one of my public pages, Buddy Loves Me, a visitor, she inboxed me and she said, could you please explain to me what you mean when you say, when you was talking about a profit in your message, like public pain for public profit. She was like, I don't understand what you're saying. And I so appreciated her question. And I was more than happy to help her to understand. And when I told her, she was like, oh, okay, she appreciated it. But when you see the word profit, you're thinking about money. But
right.
me sharing my private pain for public profit, no. And even like what we're doing right now, our talks are going to be profitable to those that desire to change their lifestyle, those
mm-hmm.
that desire to change your thought process, those that desire to retrain your brain to stop thinking the way you think so that you could start thinking positive and come out of negative situations where you're being mistreated and taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, Erica, people have unmet needs.
Mm-hmm.
And people that have an unmet need, they tend to turn to people, places, or things.
Mm-hmm.
And God
yep.
is on the back burner. They go to God last. We need
mm-hmm.
to go to God first because
mm-hmm.
God will show us what to do. The devil, like, this is an example, and I'm not blaming the devil for everything, but you got an unmet need. Let's say the guy got hurt, his dad not in his life, his mom is an alcoholic, like he's always alone, but he want a girlfriend, he looking for love, and he think that's going to solve his problem. You know, looking for love in all the wrong places. He get involved with this girl. The girl see his vulnerabilities. She take advantage of him. He get even more hurt. So now he still have an unmet need. Now he got a hole in his heart. Now he has a guard up because he don't want to trust nobody. So hurt people hurt people. But it comes
mm-hmm.
in with that manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to the manipulation and people trying to get out of the relationship, whether
mm-hmm.
it's codependent or abusive or whatever it may be, the number one thing is lies.
Mm-hmm.
They will tell a lie to keep
mm-hmm.
them. But they will
mm-hmm.
tell a lie to entrap them and to make them feel guilty.
Mm-hmm.
I know a guy I was dealing with, he was like, after all that I did for you, you going to do this to? I said, what did you do for me?
I know that's right.
Like, please tell me, because everything in your life flowed over into my life. Like, I became your everything, and I had to tell you I am not your savior. I cannot save you. But you know what? He put such a guilt trip that sometimes I felt like he was not going to be okay if I was not going to be there for him.
Mm-hmm.
But God was like, look, this person is draining you and is sucking the life out of you. You could try to help them for 2 more years, and they're going to stay where they are because they're not ready to face their problems. And I finally closed that door. I said, you know what? I cannot do it. I cannot be a friend to this person. They got to find out on their own. To this day, guess what? Still didn't find their way. And until they get ready for self, you know, self-talk, real self-talk, and healthy confrontation, they're going to stay. And, I mean, a beautiful person, so gifted, talented, wonderful life ahead of them, but they stuck in the past. And,
mm-hmm.
Erica, I'm not saying, you know, that's a bad thing. When I was stuck in my past, when I rehearsed things over and over, when I didn't know what to do, I found my way. And once I got out of it, listen, I never went back. Because I don't want to be controlled. I don't want to be manipulated. I don't want to help people so much where it takes away from me as a person. And one of the things, I want to go back to what you said about a mother and a son. A mother's love for her son, it will cause major problems, like as a young child, growing up and then a young man, and then that young man get married. Remember the movie by the book by Steve Harvey?
Oh,
about relationships. I forget the name of it.
Act like a
think like a man. The I forget the character's name. He was in a codependent relationship with his mother, and he was a mama's boy. She couldn't, she lived her life through him. He couldn't do nothing. And he put his mother before his girlfriend. So his girlfriend was like, you know what, let your mama do it because I'm done.
Right,
and she went on with her life. And it took her to leave. I wish we had a clip, like if we had a video so we could show that part of the movie. But she left him. And when she left him and he really... And she left him, and then he realized how much he loved her, how much he missed her. Then he stood up to his mother.
Ain't that something? Yep.
But we have, you know, parents that try to live their lives through their children. That's codependent relationship. That's dysfunctional. You should have, I mean, if you, I'm not going to say you should have, because some parents just didn't have that opportunity.
Right.
But even after their children got of age, they still had a choice to do whatever it was that they couldn't do in their younger years. So don't force it on your children. Don't make your children go to college and do something you want them to do because you didn't do it.
Right. Right.
That's codependency. That's dysfunction. That's control.
Yeah, if that's you said it, control, absolutely. I ran into before the pandemic, I took like a little art workshop. And this lady told me, the one who owned the shop, that she was an accountant. She went to school and got her bachelor's degree in an accountant, to be an accountant, making good money, because that's what she was, you know, supposed to do, supposed to go to college, supposed to get your degree in a lucrative job, you know, so the parents say. She ended up, after all of that, those years of college and getting her BA and making a whole lot of money, she figured out that that's not what she wanted to do. So
right.
She ended up quitting her job, making a whole lot of money so she could do arts and crafts and own her own studio. And she got that job to be an accountant. She went to college because that is what she was told that she should do, and didn't even want to.
I believe it.
Right? Yeah. Absolutely. And you'd be surprised. Oh, there's a lot of children that go through that. A lot of kids go through that. They tell them, this is who you are going to be. This is what you're going to do, and they don't have any other choice. And that's very dangerous to someone.
It is. So I want to give...
Everybody's not called to do that.
No, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Everybody is not called to do what their parents say that they're supposed to do as a career. That is not. When a child gets to a certain point, they are to do what their heart calls them to do and what they want to do, what they love to do, what they're passionate about. They are not to be controlled, and you tell them that this is what they should do because it will make them some money, very lucrative or whatever have you. That's not it. Life is not like Life is not like that. You don't hold your goals and your children, because like you said, Stacey, you didn't do it, so now you're going to force your children to do it. And that's the thing about it is, a lot of times that's setting them up for failure, and I don't mean failure in the sense of, you know, that they'll get bad grades, and some of them do. Some of them go to college, they don't want to get bad grades, they end up failing. Some of them do it on purpose because they ain't want to be there to begin with, but it'll set them up later on in life. They will regret. They will have a whole lot of regrets, and they will carry around a lot of frustration and anger because they were made to spend a lot of their years doing something that they didn't want to do in the first place.
Absolutely. And they end up resenting their parents, and that bitterness creeps in.
Absolutely, yep. And they wonder why they, after college, they go and they live on their own, and they don't ever see them again. Smart. And it's the truth. A lot of times kids, when they get to college, and their parents don't see them no more, and that might be a reason why. It's because if you're forcing them to live a life that they never wanted to live, then they're like, okay, I can't go back to that.
Yep. And then some of them, they end up being buck wild because they had such a tight grip on them, wouldn't let them live their lives, because I don't want you to make the same mistakes I made. I don't want you to do the things that I did. And that's the worst thing that a parent can do. And I mean, we learn from our mistakes. You know, I believe some parents did the best they could, but the culprit here is the spirit of fear.
Yep.
And you mentioned that earlier. Mm-hmm. When you're fearful, guess what? You're not going to do what you're capable of doing. And that's why a lot of times when I'm working with some of my clients, I tell them, get a pen and a piece of paper, and I ask a question. And I say, what would you do if you wasn't afraid?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll look at me like, what? You can hear them thinking through the phone, but what would you do if you wasn't afraid? Because you, like, say if you parked in that parking spot, you parked in that parking spot because you were afraid to move. But if you wasn't afraid, where would you go? What would you do? What would you accomplish? Where would you live? You know, it's a very good question.
It
requires self-examination. Can't nobody answer it but you.
Yep.
And so when I had to face my fears, I said, whoa, it's a lot. What would I do if I wasn't afraid? Well, the first thing I wanted to do was come out of the box that people had put me in. Because when you're in a codependent relationship, your freedom is snatched away from you because you can't do but so much, because you're always fixing somebody else's stuff and you neglect yourself. You know, caregivers fall into that same category.
Oh, they fall heavy
because,
into
it. Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole nother topic.
It's a whole nother topic, yeah.
But I think when we can do a part two to this, because Sheila really wanted to be here, and when she comes back, we can definitely do, you know, a part two, because I really want to focus on the family part, because I think that's really, really good, what we're discussing so far, and the manipulation piece, but even the parents living their lives through their children. Like, there is just so many layers to this.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I wanted to point out is that when one member of the family has a major problem or a traumatic experience, and they turn to drugs, alcohol, gambling, food, relationships, like whatever it is, I mean, they do something that's out of the norm.
Mm-hmm.
It affects the entire family.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if the family comes together for, like, an intervention, it can help that person. But if the family goes into attack mode and beat that person down, that only pushes that person further into the addiction, into the people that they, and, you know, when you in an addiction like that, you have people you hang out with, y'all drink, y'all get high together, all that stuff. They become their family. They become their friends. So now they surrounded by a wall, a room of negativity. And I never really looked at it that way, because you got drug houses, you got, you know, speakeasies, you got trap houses. Everybody in there with an addiction, but everybody in there with a hole in their soul, everybody in there with a hole in their heart, sadness. And they drinking, they drugging up, trying to cover up their unmet need. So at some point, Erica, they sober up while they in that drug house, in that trap house, in that whorehouse, wherever it is. And in that moment of sobriety, I wonder what goes through their mind.
Right.
Because if it was me, I would ask the question, how the hell did I get here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't belong here. And then you look at yourself, you look at your clothes, you look at how dirty the place is. So codependency with addictions, it causes you to lose your identity, and it affects your confidence and your self-esteem. So when you're in these situations and your confidence is that big, you don't believe in yourself anymore, your family don't believe in you anymore, then what are you going to do? You're going to find somebody that's going to accept you just the way you are, and then all of your stuff is going to interfere into their lives, and they're going to try and save you and rescue you, and they're going to be so depleted.
Ain't that
and
something?
If somebody... Yes, if somebody is listening, if anything that we're saying is standing out to you, or you know someone, this is a good time to share. Press the share button and share it with someone. And if you are in a codependent relationship, you know what? Even if you don't understand what a codependent relationship is, on my Facebook page, and Erica, I tagged you in this post, I put a link for those that are interested to take a codependency test. It's an online test that you can take. Yes.
Okay.
And it gives 9 codependent signs. So I recommend that you go to my website and that you click on the link and you could take the test, and it will give you your results. But if you are in a codependent relationship, or if you are struggling with an addiction, and you know that you are relying more on your partner, your friend, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, and you're really, really leaning on them hard, and you know that you're draining them, you know that their lives are changing, and you really do feel bad about that. And Erica, I'm taking the time to say that because I do believe that some people really feel bad because they know what they're doing. And they see how it's breaking that person down. And they really want to make a difference.
They feel as though that their needs are more important.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, but that's
called selfishness.
It is.
That's exactly what that is. They being selfish. I don't care what I'm putting this person through. I don't care what they got to do, jump through hoops or whatever. I'm important. My needs need to be taken care of right now. So I just have to get over it. And that's what people do, and that's the truth. People can feel bad. I'm not saying and exactly. You're right. I do believe what you said, that people feel bad in that moment. They feel they have a come to Jesus moment, but then they just push that aside and say, you know, it is what it is. I need this person to do this for me. I need this person. You know what I mean? So they just going to have to suck it up. I truly, truly believe that's true. It's selfishness. It's just outright selfishness, however anybody wants to spend it. Anytime you can watch somebody deplete themselves day in and day out, use all their resources, all their time to take care of you. And you mean to tell me you have no sympathy for anybody? You just going to suck them dry to meet your needs? That is selfish. And how long do you believe that that is going to last? It is not going to last. People don't understand that. Everything is temporal. It comes to an end. So while
that's true.
It's temporal. While they're enjoying themselves at you know, having someone just come to their rescue each and every time. But I, you know what, and I really shouldn't say that. Let me backtrack, because some people actually believe they need someone to take care of them. And they're serious. They seriously believe that they will not live. This person does not, or somebody does not take care of me, I will not be able to make it. Some people actually feel that way and are very genuine in their feeling.
You are telling the truth. Why do you think so many men live with women? They won't get their own place.
Mm-hmm.
They have to live with another woman.
Mm-hmm.
And that woman takes care of them, cook for them, clean for them, do everything for them. Sometimes she take better care of him than she do her own kids. I'm not saying all women, but some, and I mean it goes that way for the women too.
Mm-hmm.
And I seriously have a problem with that. Like, a man doesn't need to live with a woman. You a man, get your own place. Get a job,
right.
First of all. Get a job.
Right.
Take care of yourself. Get your own spot. Don't be living
right.
with another woman, driving
right.
her car. Go get your own car.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some women are so lonely and
yes.
they're desperate. They say, oh, but I got a man. I got a man. But
no,
what kind of man you got where
no,
he can't even help you put the curtains up?
You have an old
and,
son. That's
come
what
on.
Called an old son. That's what it's called. And I hate
codependent.
That's what it is. They have an old son. They don't have no man. That's an old son. Okay. They done get raised their kids. Now they went and got somebody else. And like you said, it's, and that's the truth, though. That people do it, women do it, you know, loneliness. And you have what you call, you know, parents, I've heard of it, have the empty nest syndrome where they raise their children now gone, and now the nest is empty, and they don't know what to do. They only know how to take, they only know how to raise children. They only know how to take care of somebody else. So it's emptiness. So a lot of women get lonely. They get desperate. They just run out here. And the first one they meet, they just live with them. They want to take care of them and cook them and all that stuff. And that is because, now see, this is a subject, and we might, it's something we may want to discuss, but when you don't know why you're here on this earth, if you're not in search of that, that's what happens. That's what happens when you get lonely and you get desperate when you are not working on yourself, when you are not making things happen in your own life. You feel lonely, you feel empty, you have no sense of purpose, and that's what it is. We all have a purpose on this earth, and if we all knew what that was, and in my opinion, there will be far less loneliness than there is. There will be far less desperation. And you wouldn't have these codependent relationships because you would be too busy working on you and trying to figure out why you're here and how you can help make this world better. You would be focused on that. You wouldn't be focused on trying to take care of someone else and saving that person. Because you would have no time for it. You would be fulfilled in doing what you needed to do, you know, for yourself and for this world. You know, and that's another subject. Because when you don't have anything to do, that's, you got to fill your time with anything necessary. And that also, another thing is, that's also, it goes back to self. That means that you are running away from yourself. If you try to sew anything up in your life just to take up time and just to have something to do, that means that for some reason it's something you don't want to deal with. You don't want to, if you don't want to spend time by yourself to make yourself, to answer those tough questions and to be a better person and continue to better yourself, that's a problem. That means you're running away from something.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to deal with it. And that's why we always say everything comes back to you. Your life is what it is because of you. Now, let me say something about that. We're not responsible for what other people do to us to a certain degree. So if, you know, you have those who have been molested, men and women, you have those who have been abused, both men and women, you know, you have, you know, things of that nature. Of course, you are not responsible for those things. That's external. Those are things somebody has done to you. You didn't do that to yourself. That does not count. How you move forward does, though. How you move forward. So that happened to you. And I can only imagine, you know, how you even live with that and even heal from that and get past it. I can only imagine that. If you don't, then it will ruin your life. So you, in a sense, you do still have, you owe yourself that much to heal yourself from any trauma that is not your fault. It still all goes back to you. How you want to live your life from whatever happened, how you want to move forward, it's up to you. Once you deal with that issue, you have to deal with that. You got to sit down and ask yourself those questions. You got to relive it over again so you can work through it. You will never be able to go around any trauma that has entered your life because it will keep coming back up until you work through it, meaning your behavior will always be the same, and it will be inappropriate, and it will show up at the most inappropriate time, and that's because you have not worked through it. Everything is about self. It's about self-betterment, self-development. All of that, when people say self-care, that's about taking care of yourself. It's about doing what you need to do for you, and that's what it is. And one of the hardest things, one of the things that people have the hardest time doing is really taking a look at who they are. That's the hardest thing. People have the hardest time looking in that mirror and realizing the person that is looking back at them. That's rough, because that means you got to look at everything. You got to look at all your little idiosyncrasies, everything that you don't like about yourself, everything that happened to you. You got to look at all of that. You got to look at all of that, and you got to say, what happened to me is not me, and you got to move forward. But until you do that, codependency will always happen, among a lot of other issues.
I want to read Dr. Sharon Martin. She said, codependent traits serve a purpose in childhood. They help us cope with scary, confusing, and unpredictable family lives, but they cause us problems in adulthood. Codependency gets in the way of having healthy relationships. And I am codependent when I deny myself self-care. I am codependent when I rescue others from their poor life choices.
Wow.
I am codependent when I refuse to address my feelings. I am codependent when I cater to others while I ignore myself. I am codependent when I say yes when I really mean no. I am codependent when I tone myself down because I understand my success will upset those around me. Erica Burnett, do you hear what she's saying? That
I
one
sure
is deep.
I
am codependent when I do for others out of a need to control how others view me. I am codependent when I accept unhappiness as my norm.
Wow.
I am codependent when I stay in unhealthy relationships, even though in my heart I want to move on. Wow.
Wow, that's deep.
Mm-hmm. We could do a whole show on that topic.
I'm telling you, that's deep, because she named a lot of stuff, like, you know how we talked about self-abandonment? That's abandoning. That's exactly what that is. Every time, everything she said was a form of abandonment. You are abandoning yourself to please somebody else. Ain't that something, how everything runs together? Everything is relatable. It's relative. Everything is relative.
It is like all of these shows, if everybody take their time and just start listening one after the other, and listen, some people need to put it on repeat, and let's listen to it over and over, especially the PTSD one, because that was so good. Oh, my gosh, his testimony was so good. But I got three more I want to read first.
Okay, it says,
I am codependent when I take care of others while I refuse to take care of myself. I am codependent when I have no clue what I think, feel, or need, and live to cater to others instead of focusing on my own life. And throw the mic on the floor. I'm done.
And that's why I said, and the common denominator is self. She is talking about the person. She's saying, I am codependent when I am doing this to myself. That's exactly what it's saying. It's saying this behavior, I am causing this behavior. I am causing my own sadness and depression because I am trying to please everybody else but me. Ain't that something? That's interesting. And folks realize it. They just do not realize everything has to do with the decisions that you are making. You are abandoning yourself each and every time you do things like that. That means you are telling yourself, and folks don't realize that when we talk about self-talk, every time you deny yourself, you are telling yourself that everyone else that you're helping is worth more than you are.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying. And that's why a lot of people walk around frustrated, angry. They got attitudes. They're depressed and they're sad because they're not taking the time to put themselves first. I'm not saying that you're not gonna have sometime in your life put somebody else for you. Of course that's gonna happen. That's definitely gonna happen. You can't make a habit out of it though. Because if you do, you will never, ever take care of yourself the way you should care for yourself. Your mental, emotional, and spiritual health is very important because if you do not take care of those things, how can you help somebody else? You can't. Because you will only give
no
that
way.
Tell of who you are.
That's true. And that's why it's so important that we start driving the bus.
Right.
Don't let nobody drive for you. It's your bus. You drive the bus. You control who get on and off your bus. And sometimes, like Abraham had to tell Lot, listen, we need to separate because your people, y'all out of order. Y'all crazy. Get away from
y'all
me.
Get my nerves now. Y'all got to go.
Yes. Like, I got stuff for me to do. I'm out of here. So... But we are coming to the end of tonight's broadcast. And do you have any closing remarks, anything you want to share with the listeners today?
I just want to say, everyone who's listening, ladies and gentlemen, it is so very important that you take care of yourself so you don't end up in relationships that you should not be in. Take care of yourself. Take the time to work on yourself, your mental health, your emotional health, your spiritual health. Take time to. And if you work on your spiritual health, everything else will fall in the line. It will make everything so clear to you. You will know what questions to ask. You will know how to move in this world. You will know to make with a clear mind. But it all starts with you. You can't live this life out loving who you are without taking care of yourself. Try to take care of you first. Get yourself straight. You know, I mean, get yourself straight first. Work on you first. Then you can go out and do whatever it is you need to do for everybody else. But you got to take care of you. That's very important.
Yes, thank you so much for saying that. And what I would like to say is whatever you are going through, mentally, emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, you have to stand accountable for your actions. You're not responsible for the actions of other people. And we can't control what other people do and what other people say, but we can control how we allow it to manifest in our lives or to leave our lives, because we don't have to accept and come into agreement with negative actions or behavior towards us. It's okay to say no. It's okay to say, I'm not going to accept this hurt or this pain. It did hurt me, but I'm not going to carry this. This is not mine. Don't take ownership of it. And just learn how to be honest with yourself and what you're feeling, and stop saying that you're okay when you're not okay. When we say we're okay when we're not okay, we tend to put a mask on. And people put a mask on to camouflage what they're feeling. Like, what's really going on with you underneath the surface? I can't answer that question for you, and neither can Erica. So self-examination and healthy confrontation is the two things that I want to leave with you. I always say, do the conference table. And Erica kind of mentioned it earlier, but sometimes you have to sit down and you have to write the cons and the pros. You have to write the negatives and the positives. And then as you go down that list, the things that are positive, you want to strengthen those things. And so how do you do that? You might have to do some research. You might have to go to the library. You might have to take a class. But those things that are negatives, what purpose do they serve in your life? Will it work if you perfect it? Will it work if you get the kinks out of it? Or do it simply need to go in the trash because, you know, it ain't nothing good going to come out of it? And to be honest, some people are in relationships and ain't nothing good going to come out of it. And you know nothing is good going to come out of it. One of the statements that I just read, and it was, let me go back to it real quick. And it says, I am codependent when I have no clue what I think, feel, or need and live to cater to others instead of focusing on my own life. Well, today, if you walk away with anything, take care of your own life. Stop worrying about other people and stop trying to fix other people. And I'm talking to myself because I was Miss Fix-It. You know, there's a song that say, the cleanup lady. Come in, I'm going to clean it up, I'm going to fix it up, I just want to help everybody. But now, I'm quiet. I'm not so quick to open my mouth and comment on stuff and say things. Let people ask for help. And then when you give your advice, empower them, but don't tell them what to do. Give them choices, A, B, C, D, because we can't make choices for people. So that's my takeaway. And so we thank you guys for joining us tonight. Erica Burnett and Stacey Lunsford, our panelists, was not here. Apostle Sheila A. Olive, we love you. Pray that you're having a good time on your retreat. But God bless everyone, and thank you so much for joining us tonight. And we'll see you next Friday at 7 p.m. Good night.
Good night. Thanks, Stacy. Good night, everybody.
Okay, good night, Erica. Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.